In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. Glad you're joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. If this is your first time joining us, a special welcome to you. We've been doing some pretty politically intense shows the last few weeks, focusing on fairness and equity, a new tactic by the political left to get what they want, which really boils down to applied racism or weaponized racism. But with Holy Week coming up this week, we're going to pull back just a little bit on politics. So next week, we'll do Holy Week with a special guest we're still trying to line up, but this week is Hell Week and Beyond, a new book by Scott McEwen, soon to be released. Since it is the Easter season, you know, Palm Sunday marks the start of Jesus's Hell Week, where he went through incredible suffering before he ever even got to the cross. And on the other side of that Hell Week, it was a new birth. All great stories deal with a transformation of some kind at their heart. That struggle and transformation and rebirth is what's known as the hero's journey, which is the focus of Joseph Campbell's seminal work, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, in which he examined the monomyth, the idea that mythical tales from around the world are, at their core, the same basic story, just with a thousand different faces. The hero goes from his current state, is one way or another selected to endure trials, crosses into new experiences and realms, endures them, and learns from them to gain the skills and weapons needed to overcome, and by doing so, to emerge on the other side as a reborn hero, and able or equipped to be an example or better leader for society and so change their world. Just think of the old classic myths, the Trial of Hercules, Jason and the Argonauts, Ulysses' Odyssey. In each, the hero is tested and tried, reforged through the fires they must go through, and emerge stronger and more capable than before in order to be a better, more purified leader for having gone through it. In the Bible, Noah goes through an earth-destroying flood and emerges as the new father of mankind. Moses goes through his struggles to lead the Israelites through the Red Sea, taking them to a new land. If only they would just stop whining and disobeying God. But when the people couldn't be transformed because of their lack of faith, despite seeing the most miraculous miracles in the Bible, they couldn't emerge through their Hell Week and gave up. So the whole of Israel was then transformed literally, as everyone who left Egypt died out and was replaced by their children. These stories resonate with us. They endure because we also endure our own trials in life. Life is never easy, and sometimes it's almost unbearable. How we turn out on the other side of them is the real story. And if you've endured and made it through, you're better off for having done it. And you're then better able to help someone else get through their own Hell Week. I'd like to welcome Scott McEwen back to the show. He is the New York Times bestselling co-author of American Sniper. He also has two of his own series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series and also Camp Valor series. And he has a new book coming out soon, May 18th. It's Hell Week and Beyond, which you can pre-order right now. Scott, it's great to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, Mark. Glad to be back.
Yeah, you know, it being Holy Week this next week, we're trying to avoid politics a little bit, but, you know, hey, we got to have some of it in there. Let's get that get the politics out of the way. I think some of the big news out of California is it looks like Newsom is going to be on the recall ballot. Let's get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I don't know how they can, let's just say, find enough bad signatures, if you will. And, you know, one thing I want to say right off the bat and something I posted up and really feel strongly about is these Democrats will check signatures on a recall of their boy who's governor, but there was not a signature checked on any of the ballots, the mail-in ballots for the president. So you tell me the priorities there, and I'll tell you that that the whole thing smells.
Yep. So get in power and stay in power.
But the bottom line is, you know, I'm very hopeful that California is finally going to get this bozo out of office. He has done so many bad things for this state and so many bad things for what I believe California in general, not, you know, starting with fires and his response to fires and the whole eco response to the forests, et cetera, to, you know, more recently, this whole COVID shakedown fraud that we've had to go through, and basically shutting down the entire, you know, the entire school systems.
Well, in terms of the recall effort and how that works, it's a little different than other places like Oregon. The way that, as I understand it, they gather the signatures, they then have to verify them, and you're right, they've got plenty of signatures now that they would have to get rid of 29% of those in order for that to fail. But then, in terms of actually getting on the ballot, there's two. It's a two-part question. One is, should he be recalled? And then who should he be replaced with? And then it's kind of open season. I mean, you can have all sorts of people on the ballot. I think in 2003, they had something like 135 people on there.
It's going to be crazy who's going to stand up. And, you know, it's been interesting to see the advertising on TV lately, because that Tom Steyer, who's, my favorite person. But that being said, Steyer's sticking his face in it right now on the Dem side. So, you know, there really hasn't, I mean, we've got the usual suspects on the Republican side, but there really hasn't been anybody kind of come out and become a front runner. And I would not be surprised if we don't have another Hollywood-esque type Arnold figure come out of this mix that has huge name recognition that could probably take this thing.
Well, I would think that's what's needed to win. Tom Steyer, of course, is, you know, as you say, he's blanketing the airwaves there with advertising. That's right. Just replacing one bad Democrat with another Democrat. Do people in California not see that?
Dude, I don't know what. You know, Mark, it's so difficult for me to see what anybody sees in these people. So, I mean, it's almost like I don't have a common ability to even understand what they're thinking in some of these things that these guys put into both the legislature as well as the governorship. So, you know, I can't even understand the California electorate other than the Democrats control the House, they control the Senate, and they control the governorship just like they do in Oregon. And, you know, you and I both know that we don't agree with their politics, but it doesn't seem like anybody listens to our side.
No. Well, it is theoretically possible that he could be replaced, and with a Republican. In 2003, the top two Republicans got a whopping 62% of the vote versus the top Democrat that only got 31.5%. And Arnold, in fact, got 48.6%. I mean, he nearly won an outright majority with that. So the real question, though, is Scott McEwen running for governor?
Yeah. No, I'm not throwing my hat into any political ring right now. I was asked before to potentially run for the House seat here in this district where I'm at, and who, you know, another billionaire stepped in to take it out after Duncan Hunter was asked to leave. And I'm glad I didn't throw my hat into that ring, because, you know, you're not going to outspend somebody like the guy that took it. And frankly, I don't mind Daryl Issa anyway. He's actually a pretty strong conservative.
No, in fact, he had a real good quote after Biden was saying that the Republicans want to make sure that people don't vote. He says, no, we want to make it hard to cheat. I think that's a great observation there. Of the people that are potentially running, do you have any favorites at this point?
I don't. I don't like the ex-San Diego mayor, and I frankly don't like the Republican, the guy that's been around running for years now, so... I don't have any favorites other than anybody but this moron. And hopefully we can get some even mid-level Republican that's, you know, somewhat at center or right of center to try and take the reins on this thing.
Well, you know, California has gotten so bad that if you just left the governorship empty, it would be an improvement. So,
yeah, it's true. It's true.
All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we'll have more with author Scott McEwen talk about his book, Hell Week and Beyond. And welcome back. We're talking to Scott McEwen. He's the best-selling co-author of American Sniper. He also has two of his own series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series and Camp Valor series. Highly recommend both of those. In fact, I recommend all of Scott's books. He's got some great nonfiction books out there as well. And he has a new book coming out, coming up on May 18th, Hell Week and Beyond. And you can pre-order that right now. And Scott, before we get into your new book, I'd like to talk a little bit about your writing techniques, and just to kind of open the window a little bit, because, you know, being an editor for about 20 years or so, and being in the film industry for a couple of years beyond that, I always really enjoy understanding how an author approaches their own work and whatnot. So in terms of writing fiction, I know that this is a nonfiction book that you've got coming up, but in terms of writing fiction, what comes to you first, the plot or the characters?
You know, I'm kind of lucky in that, you know, my characters are almost always based on people that I know. Mm. And, you know, especially like with Sniper Elite, you know, the Sniper Elite series, that character that was the lead there was really an amalgamation of a few different SEAL team guys I knew that did a lot of black op work, a lot of stuff that would never make it through DOD approval. So I would say that the character and the mindset of the guy that's doing these operations, you know, is something that I am very, very, if you will, blessed in that I know all these guys that are pipe hitters that do this stuff for a living. And so you kind of develop this genre, this common thought process, which there is some common thought amongst these guys. Mm-hmm. Most of it's pretty brutal, but, you know, of where that character is. So I think character would be probably first because I know the guys, and then the operations would be second because there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, truth that is much stranger than fiction that happened.
You know, it's interesting, having worked with a number of lawyers through the years, almost all of them, in fact, you're probably the exception, almost all of them develop the plot first. In fact, a lot of lawyers, they sometimes have some real difficulty with developing their characters. So that's interesting that you're kind of the reverse of that.
Yeah, well, you know, just like I said, I just know a wealth of guys, you know, not and really kind of helped me out, if you will, in the writing of, you know, of Hell Week, because I just know these guys that become these characters, if you will, called SEALs, and so I have so much material just from my interactions with them that, you know, I just have a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of personalities that I can work with that I can just put right into plots.
And so, speaking of plots, when you start developing that, do you plan things out with like a roadmap of some sort? You know, this happens, and then this, and then there's this setback, and this is how he's going to have to overcome that. Or are you more of the free writer style that just sort of let things unfold as you write?
I would say that because many of my plots are operations based, you know, you have an idea, you know, and if I take, you know, for example, book one, Sniper Elite, the idea was woman gets taken, woman gets, you know, female helicopter pilot, you know, taken by the enemy, becomes a prisoner of war, is tortured and raped on film. Worst nightmare for the American public and the president. And then you have these guys that have to come in and run these operations to get her back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that one kind of naturally develops because you got the people that are doing it. And then I throw actual plots in there, actual incidents in there that have taken place historically. But like I said, you just they don't want you talking about going into Iran and killing high value targets and things of that nature. But it happens every day, Mark. Mm. You know, it just does. And the guys that do it obviously could never gain approval from the DOD to get that stuff go public. But, you know, still, even today, we see, you know, a nuclear scientist from Iran that's taken out by an automatic gun system, you know, whatever, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And everybody kind of looks at each other like, well, I wonder how that happened. Well, I know how that happened, you know, generally.
Yeah. You mentioned getting things past Department of Defense clearance and all that. Do you ever come across some things that if you were to put it in, that people just simply wouldn't believe that could actually have happened?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, some of that stuff in the first book of Sniper Elite is people are like, how could you think these plots up? You know, like, you know, extracts from airplanes that are actually flying commercial planes. Dude, that stuff happens.
Mm.
It happens. I'm not making that up. You know, like that's there are operations where that does happen.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's not talked about a lot, but commercial flights are used more common than people know to insert and extract, you know, and sometimes in flight, you know, insert.
Now, are you able to get those into works of fictions without DOD approval, or do you still have to get DOD approval?
Well, certainly not. I don't even go to the DOD on any of that. That's different names, different places, different characters. Never heard of it. Never want to know of it. It's all black.
Yeah, I had worked years and years ago with a guy that was a CIA operative. And in fact, I accidentally outed him to his wife, but that's a whole other story. But anyway, when he went to the CIA to get approval to release his book, because it had to do with how the Cold War actually ended, they told him you should be asking for forgiveness, not for permission.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I know. I mean, you know, they're very hardcore. you know, Ryan Zinke's book, which we didn't think, you know, actual nonfiction, you know, American Commander, we had over 120 pages redacted from that book.
Wow.
And both of us looked at each other like, you got to be kidding me. You know, like they're upset over that. You know, like, you know, neither one of us felt anything in there was classified. But then they went so far as to say, you know, that the term SEAL Team 6 was classified too, which I think is in the public domain.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did that work? If they redacted 120 pages, I mean, what did you have left?
It's called rewrite, you know?
Every author loves. Every author loves to have to rewrite things.
Oh, dude, I'm telling you. Like, you know, thankfully, Ryan had such a wealth of stories that they didn't get upset over that we had a lot of material. So, but it was definitely an interesting time when they come back with that and say, oh, you none of this gets in.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned Zinke, and I know that you've had other co-authors, Efren Matos, and I think, obviously Chris Kyle, too. So you use co-writers from time to time. How does that work, I mean, writing with another writer?
You know, on the autobiography side, which, you know, those three were, you know, basically you record their comments, their statements, their actual operations. And then I take the recording and then I make that into a narrative, hopefully that's, you know, that works for people to read easier than just an interview. But there's really not that much change from the actual, if you will, interview to the final product, other than, you know, your tempo, your spacing, where you put the stories into the actual, you know, book. So it's kind of naturally flows, and I like to do it that way because it kind of gets the personality of the person you're interviewing, be that Zinke or Chris or Efren, and gets them to talk about what they're doing without having to worry about immediately writing it.
Right. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Scott McEwen is our guest today, and we're talking about his coming up book, Hell Week and Beyond. It's going to be released on May 18th. You can pre-order that right now. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's a best-selling co-author of American Sniper, and he has two of his own series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series and also Camp Valor. And his newest book will be coming out May 18th, Hell Week and Beyond, and we'll talk about that in a little bit here. Scott, this is a work of nonfiction. Your other books, you've got a lot of both nonfiction and fiction books out there. In terms of writing nonfiction, how do you come up with the ideas for nonfiction books? You're walking along and just boom, all of a sudden an idea hits you, or is it something else?
Well, for example, with the Hell Week, you know, I felt like I've never really ever kind of delved into the making of a Navy SEAL. I mean, I've done individual stories of Chris's, if you will, Buds, and even Efren a little bit, and Ryan a little bit, who was a Buds instructor, but I've never taken that idea of what it is to take many times a 17-year-old, 18-year-old young man and say to them, we're about to put you through some of the worst hell you can even imagine. And if you come out the other side, you're going to be one of the best and the most vaunted, if you will, warriors on earth. But not everybody's going to make it out the other side. In fact, the majority of you won't even get close to making it out the other side. But what is the mentality that puts these guys through this and that makes them want to do it and then come out the other side? And, you know, a lot of these books have been written, if you will, by people and many SEALs that have done a great job and probably, you know, they've been through it. I haven't, and everything else. But I don't know if anybody really stood back and kind of looked in with the lens that I did in this book. And so I wrote it second person. I have some personal accounts of hell, you know, when Chris was killed at the beginning of this book, but in my own Hell Week, but how it is these SEALs get through it and even get through it today, man. I mean, you don't see SEALs giving up ever. And that attitude that they get back then is the one thing that I impress and I suggest in this book to everybody, is that the one thing you can learn from a SEAL, if there's one thing you can learn, it is their refusal to ever give up under any circumstance.
Hmm. So getting back to the writing process, in terms of that initial idea, How do you then flesh that out into a full book? Because, you know, it, once you have that moment of inspiration, you know, that you know, could be just a chapter or two on that one. But then how do you then develop that out into a much longer book in terms of the other ideas that generates and so forth? I mean, how do you pick and choose? Because when you look at something like Hell Week, there's going to be an awful lot of things that you could focus on. But how do you narrow down to the ones that you eventually decide to keep?
Well, you know, I think the ones that I did in this book and the examples that I used in this book were based on, you know, as simplistically as it may sound, 120 hours. And the 120 hours are the 5 days that essentially are Hell Week, which they term Hell Week to the SEALs. Mm-hmm. And so I basically take the character in second person after having interviewed so many of these guys, and each day has its own, if you will, set of tortures and rotations and literally rotations, they call them, but they really are torturing a lot of times and testing. And so, you know, these guys on this thing, on this journey, put themselves through it. And the weird thing is, many times these journeys are so similar because your mind and your body react in a certain way to this type of treatment, if you will, to the point where, you know, at the end, most of these guys are hallucinating in one way or another. Wow. Because they haven't slept. They haven't slept literally in 5 days. Wow. They've let them have 2 hours of sleep in 5 days because they figured out that they have to give you 2 hours of sleep in that period of time or your mind starts breaking down. How they figured that out, I don't know, but they did. Anyway, so they basically say, this is where it is, you know, these are the testing we do when we deep freeze you in the water until you're right on the edge of hypothermia, but we won't let you slip into hypothermia, you know, that type of thing. So it's really the ultimate test. And so what I do here is try and take people through that and that rotation and say, this is what these guys put themselves through, and then it gives them a better idea once they come out the other side, you know, why the attitudes of these people are what they are.
Hmm. Well, in terms of just along in the again the process of writing your book, do you bounce ideas off of other writers, or maybe you have some friends that you know are your normal advisors type of thing? I mean, how do you do that sifting process in order to decide what to keep and what not to?
Well, I think it's a combination of other people that are friends of mine that read the work, and then the editors. I mean, the editors that I have at, for example, in New York at Hachette and things of that nature. So, you know, I'd say it's a combination of both editors and personal friends and people that I value their opinion, people that read all my stuff, and, you know, some of whom are just great proofreaders too. Some people, lawyer buddies of mine, are just unbelievably great proofreaders, which really helps out a lot.
Mm. Well, getting into Hell Week there, you mentioned these rotations or tortures. It sounds like some of this, if you tried to do this under the Geneva Convention, you probably wouldn't be able to do it. Is there anything in particular that one of these rotations that you just looked at that and it really stunned you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, like the guys, the level of injury, because everybody gets injured during Hell Week and, you know, they all get a certain degree of injuries. It's almost like going through a football game for 5 days straight. You know, you're going to have a certain amount of bones that are bruised, that are chafed, that are, you know, infected, that this, that, and everything. But really the key is, don't break something to the point where you have to pull out. So, I mean, these guys are physically taken to places where sometimes they do break bones. They do break, you know, literally, you know, pull muscles. I mean, like tear muscles, you know, things that there's major injuries, you know, head injuries, whatever. But, you know, the key is don't get to the point and try and keep your body at least on that ragged edge where you're not physically required to pull out. And then the other thing that I felt was interesting is all of these guys, or a lot of these guys, are sick from a VGE, which I always wondered what that VGE is. It's a gastrointestinal disease virus that they get commonly at the SEAL teams at the base down there in Coronado. And I think we distilled it from my research, and it's pretty much Tijuana River affluent untreated sewage that these guys basically have to go down to the mud flats and live through that bacteria and that viral stuff that's in there.
Wow. How interesting.
and being sick from that, once again, does not get you out. In fact, if you try and get out because you're sick from VGE, they will terminate your ability to go back.
Wow.
Whereas if you break a bone or something, you can come back in.
Wow. Fascinating stuff that our servicemen go through. All right. Everyone stay with us. We're talking with Scott McEwen. He's a best-selling author of American Sniper. His newest book is Hell We Can Be On. We're going to start zeroing in on that coming up next. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's the best-selling co-author of American Sniper. He also has his own two series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series and also Camp Valor. Highly recommend both of those if you've got spring break coming up and some kids in your life, or you as an adult are looking for some new reading material. There you go. His newest book is Hell Week and Beyond, coming out May 18th, but you can pre-order that right now. And Scott, I'd like to read this from Amazon. It says this: of the 18 months required to become a Navy SEAL, 1 week will cause over half the trainees to quit or ring the bell. Only the toughest make it through. In Hell Week and Beyond, Scott McEwen takes the readers to the sands of Coronado Beach in San Diego, where Navy SEALs are put through the most grueling training known to mankind. Grit, commitment, heart, and soul are needed to become a SEAL, because those are the elite forces who go into the toughest battles for America. So as the writer of this book, what in particular would you like people to know about this?
Well, I think in particular, what I find amazing is, you know, and maybe Hollywood, I sent it to a producer buddy of mine in Hollywood, and he wrote back, because he really wasn't familiar with the whole training regimen, if you will, either. And he said, you know what this is, dude? He said, this is like the Batman creation story. Mm. He's like, this is like a Superman or a Batman creation story, because these really are Supermen. And these really are, you know, action figures, but they're real. And what creates them is really BUDS and the SEAL team training process, and weeds them out and makes them these superheroes that they become, both in society as well as, you know, in our military. And they are revered in our military as well. I mean, you talk to anybody in the military and you say that guy's a SEAL, immediately they have street credibility. That's all I can say. Anyway, so, you know, so, but long story short, it really is a Superman creation story. And it's about these guys, many of whom are just young kids, just normal kids, if you will, from America and other places in the world. You know, a Polish friend of mine became a SEAL as well. But, you know, like in other places, that decide that they're going to be that guy. They're going to make it through this. They will not quit. And once they're there, then you understand why you hear about them killing the bin Ladens, taking out the, you know, the terrorists, things of this nature, because they're a very driven group. You know, they're very, very committed to what they're going to do. And once they are given clear set of marching orders, they'll do what they're told to do, and or they will die doing it, one or the other. You know, that's really their, if you will, their warrior code. And that is really built into this book. And Hell Week is just is kind of that testing procedure to see if you've got what it takes to be that.
Well, and how does that process work in terms of getting SEALs selected? Do they select them? You know, they meaning the Navy select them, or can pretty much anybody sign up to be this?
Anybody can sign up to be that, but you have to take a test before you go in to have a certain level of physical stamina proficiency, et cetera. So there's a certain baseline level. And then they say, okay, if you want to be a SEAL, you go in there. But they do this Hell Week. You know, they select a certain few and they put them through a lot beforehand. There's 1 month out of 18 months, and they start this Hell Week after 1 month. And there's a reason why they do that. By the end of this process, Mark, they'll have over $1.5 million, I've heard estimate, spent on every single one of these recruits that ultimately become SEALs. So they want to get rid of the guys that aren't going to make it early on in the process. That's why Hell Week is like 1 month in, you go to Hell Week, because they want to make sure that if they're going to spend all this money on this guy, that he's not going to, if you will, get out after they've spent the money. So they do this procedure of Hell Week early on in the SEAL qualified training process, because they want to make sure that the guys that are not going to make it, that can't take it, and that are going to ring the bell, they want to make sure it's done early.
In terms of, you mentioned that this is 18 months, and Hell Week definitely gets the most attention, you know, for people that are outside of the whole SEAL training. What are the other 17 and three quarter months do? What do they do for those?
Then you become a SEAL, and then you get the skill set that you know, the basic skill set to be a SEAL. You got to learn how to dive, you know, very, very well. You got to do underwater, you know, Draeger breathing dives. You got to do night dives. You got to do swimming, you know, in hellish conditions in cold water. You got to learn how to jump out of an airplane. Then you got to learn how to jump out of an airplane with oxygen. Then you got to learn how to jump out of an airplane at dark with oxygen. Then you got to learn how to, you know, to operate any weapons system given to you, from eight light arms, AK-47, M4, M16, to heavy machine guns, to rockets, to LAWS missiles, to running satellite equipment, stealing cars, you name it, dude. All those things that you think a SEAL can do, there's a lot more that he is taught to do, and that's where the millions of dollars of training go into each one of these men.
So it's all tactical training. It's not like they're sitting in a classroom somewhere.
Oh, no, there's classroom training, too. I mean, they have to go in and learn how to do, you know, PowerPoints after they get intel, or they do some type of, you know, operation where they get into a other country and take pictures or whatever. Then they got to learn how to upload that on the computer in PowerPoint to, you know, to a satellite transmission. There's a whole bunch of technical stuff that these guys have to be learn as well in order to get that SEAL qualified training.
I'm trying to envision what a SEAL PowerPoint would look like, and I just think that has to be awesome.
Yeah, I've seen a few, and basically it says, here's the weapons facilities, here's if we hit here, here's where the ammo dump is. If you're going to put something on target, put it right here, and that'll blow the whole thing up, that kind of stuff.
Wow, that's crazy. So in terms of the recruiting process or the graduation process, as the Navy looks at that, do they find, or actually even as you examine it yourself, is there something that these men have in common that make it through? Do they all come from a certain background, that sort of thing?
Certainly not. And that's what's the strange thing out of it all. You're going to have, you know, guys that come from admirals' sons that went to the U.S. Naval Academy, and you're going to have guys that have, you know, that have grown up in the, you know, the heart of Ohio or Detroit or whatever else and haven't even seen a swimming pool. Hmm. And you're going to have everything in between. The only common factor of it all is they will not quit. They just, no matter what you throw at them, they're not willing to quit. And it's that dogmatic 6 inches between your ears that every SEAL that I know of that's been through this process will tell you is the common factor. And that's what's between your ears and your inability to say, I'm going to stop.
Hmm. Really cool. So, all right, let's go and take a break there. We'll continue looking at Scott's new book, Hell Week and Beyond. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's the best-selling co-author of American Sniper. And he's got a new book coming out, Hell Week and Beyond, which you can pre-order right now. It comes out May 18th. And so, Scott, in talking about Hell Week there, in reference, and of course, Hell Week, in case people missed it earlier, I mean, it's in reference to 1 week of SEAL training that washes out a lot of trainees. And I'd like to talk about something that you say in the prologue, and you say this, quote, Hell Week is not a pointless week of torture. It is a carefully designed crucible meant to weed out those who are not physically or mentally prepared to be SEALs, to rebuild those humans who are, to make them stronger and to create unbreakable bonds between those candidates who complete the training. In terms of some of the things that they go through, we already talked about some of those, but talk to us about after they get through that and that bond that develops.
Well, you know, the thing is, once you go through and make it through Hell Week itself, you know, let's say, for example, the class starts with 250 guys. By the time the first month is done and Hell Week is done, the class will be molded down to less than 60, 70 generally, and sometimes less than that. So, you know, you're talking about already attrition of, you know, after guys that actually make the physical training to even start the process of BUDS. You know, you've already started. If you went from 1,000, then you got down to 200. Then after this week, you got down into 50 to 70. And then those guys are then going to be the guys that you develop the bonds with to be the SEALs. And so, you know, the guys that you go through, all the guys I know that went through basic training together and BUDS together, they're all very close. And the reason being is you have to help the other guy. Once you're doing it, you know, it's really becomes a team at that juncture, and they want to promote that teamwork because that's how these guys are so effective, is that they work in teams, and you know, and they call them a team for a reason, because each has his own, you know, skill set each has, but everybody has a certain base skill set that they can rely on the other guy, and they know he knows how to do it. They know it.
In terms of teams after graduation, do those teams stay together, or do they then separate and go their own way?
Yeah, they separate and go their own way. Once you're done with your SEAL qualified training, which is your 18 months, then you're given your Trident. And then a team, you choose a team, and a team chooses you, depending on what they need, you know, to fill in certain spots. And then you'll have your teams will go 1 through, you know, basically 12 is your basic numbers of teams. And then every one of them is going to have, you know, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, your platoons inside those teams. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 1 through 12 are the SEAL teams. The odd numbers are on the West Coast, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. The even numbers, 2, 4, 6, 8, are on the East Coast. And each of them then makes up a team. And then that team trains together for 18 months at least until that team can be deployed either to Africa, Middle East, Philippines, South America, wherever they're going. That team has to work together.
And that 18 months that you just said, that's beyond the 18 months of SEAL training itself.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay.
Right. Then the team gets together and they actually do their workup together and become an integral unit. You know, they're going to have a gunner here that's in their machine gunner, you know, that runs their big machine guns. Like, this guy's going to be in charge of whatever is better at weapons, or I should say of explosives, whatever. But they all have different team members are very, very good at different things.
Hmm. Well, in terms of the training, how many classes do they graduate if it's an 18 months per class? So how many are they overlapping, or is it just an 18 month period and then the next one
they'll overlap. They'll do three to four BUDS trainings, or I should say hell weeks, per year at Coronado. All SEALs are born at Coronado. In other words, all the training, whether you're on the East Coast or the West Coast or whatever, all SEALs went to training in Coronado.
Hmm. So, and we've talked a lot about the men going through the training. Who does the training and what's their background?
All of them are former SEALs, or 90% plus, or that, you know, disciplined. I imagine there's some Delta guys and some MARSOC guys that obviously can do certain things as far as the training regimen. But as far as your instructors at SEAL teams, all of them are former SEALs. Many of them have done combat experience, particularly given the fact that we've been at war for 20 years now. So many of them are either phased out or are combat experienced guys that are waiting, and they will go back into combat sometimes with the same guys they just trained. So, you know, it's each of them has combat experience and or has been in the teams that are the instructors.
Hmm. Let's actually go ahead and take a break early, because this is not just a cool book about SEAL training itself, but it's really designed to help people go through their own personal hell week. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Scott McEwen and what you can learn. And welcome back on our final segment now with Scott McEwen. We've been talking about his book, Hell Week and Beyond. That is coming out May 18th, but you can pre-order that now. And if you'd like one of his books for spring break, you can also check out The American Sniper, The Sniper Elite Series, Camp Valor Series. He's got a whole bunch of books out there. And all of those you can find on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to the store page at the top of the page there. So, Scott, we've been talking about your book here. And the important thing that I think people need to know is that this is not just a really cool book, which it most certainly is, but it's really also designed to help people go through their own personal hell week. And you say this in your book: almost all of us will never experience SEAL training hell week, but we will all experience a dark and challenging experience that will push us to our limits. And you go on to say hell can come in any number of forms: the death of a spouse, a friend, a parent, or pray not, a child, medical school, bullying, loss of a job, loss of a home, career, cancer diagnosis, etc. We will all meet hell. The goal of this book is to ensure that we are all better prepared for that idle afternoon when we are blindsided by that which we'd never expected. And you go on to say that these aren't the warm, fuzzy self-help that we get from well-meaning friends, but they're harsh, real-world lessons. Can you give us an example of something that you personally learned from studying Hell Week that maybe helped you get through a dark time?
Yeah, well, and I start the book out with my experience when Chris was killed. And that was a real tough time for me because, you know, at the end of the day, every operation that we ever did with Chris, that I ever did as far as the book, the movie, you know, all the public appearances, everything else, I was able to control, and I was able to get the budget to really make sure that Chris was protected while he was had his head down signing books or whatever other operation, public operation took place, because unfortunately we do live in a crazy world. And so I was very, very much in control of that. But then Chris got killed in a circumstance where he was trying to help another, albeit crazy member of the military or ex-military, a guy that was, that Chris did not expect the shot to come from. And then I had to deal with the fact that I made Chris in many ways a household figure. And I convinced him to be that guy that wrote that book that, you know, ultimately made him a huge, you know, if you will, known figure. And this guy killed him because he was a known figure. And so it was difficult time for me because I was taking that personally. And really what kind of pulled me out of that tailspin, if you will, that was going on there was that, I met a guy and it was one of Chris's master chiefs. And while we were in Dallas, celebrating his life and at his funeral, if you will, when I say celebration, it was really a celebration of life of an amazing warrior. I was told him, I said, look, dude, I feel responsible. And, the guy just stopped me and he said, look, he said, dude, we lose people all the time. I put guys in a place 2 seconds later where I just was. And 2 seconds later, he's shot in the head by a sniper. And he says, we have to lose people in this job. And we all took that responsibility. We all took that oath when we became SEALs. And Hell Week taught us that we are going to lose people and there's nothing we can do about that. And you got to just step up and realize that's not on you. When God says it's your day and your number is up, that's your day. And so whether you want to prepare for that or not mentally, you better, because it's coming. And so, and I kind of took that attitude, and that's really what I wanted to give people in this book was, there's certain things you can't control, but what you can control is your reaction to those things. And they're going to be harsh and they're going to be difficult and we're going to go through tough times. But as long as you make the decision, I will not quit, I will get out the other side, then you'll get out, you'll make it out the other side. And that's really what this book is about.
Well, and I think America needs that right now. When you look at what so many people are just willing to give up, and we had a tough election that was clearly stolen in my book.
Right.
I hear a lot of people saying, well, that's it, I'm never voting again. And they're ready to walk away. And that's just the terribly wrong attitude. And I really enjoyed your prologue. And in fact, it was so good that if I was your editor, I would have pushed you to make that chapter one. And the reason I say that is because a lot of readers tend to skip right over the prologue. And that is such key information. I would make sure that they read it by having that as chapter one. It was just a great opening.
Well, appreciate that. I appreciate that. It's just, you kind of make that decision, especially when you shift to second person as your prose that I did in the body of the book,
right?
How you're going to stick in the fact that this is why I wrote this book. And so that really is what the prologue is about. But it's really my message to people, and what the book is no matter how much you throw at you, if you decide I'm not going to quit, then by God, you'll win. Yeah. You will win no matter how many times you're knocked down.
Yeah. So for Hell Week itself, and the people that wash out, we've talked about, they have broken bones or maybe they get sick or something. But for those that just physically get exhausted to the point where they can't go on and do have to give up, can they try again later, or is that a permanent dropout?
It depends. It depends on the way you DOR. If you drop on request and you ring the bell, for some reason other than a physical reason, if you will, broken bone, whatever else, and then you're out. You can't go back. If you have a physical sickness, illness, broken bone, whatever else, the things that would wash you out, and that's confirmed, by the guys, the powers that be, then they'll allow you to go back in. Or they'll put you through another rotation.
Well, getting back to the SEAL trainers, in today's day and age, it's all about encouragement and participation trophies and making people feel good and staying positive. What are those trainers like, and what techniques do they use to get these guys through this week?
It's kind of funny because you have every personality, just like you have every personality of SEAL. In other words, there's some guys that are a little bit more, if you will, sadistic, and are the more the pain guys, the guys about that. And then there's other guys that are more encouraging to say, look, you can do this. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And then there's just the guys that want to punch you out. And when I say punch you out, they will get on top of you and say, it's time to ring the bell. It's time to ring the bell and stay on top of you until you either get up and fight your way back up or you ring the bell. And so, but there is no participation trophy. One of the things I really admire about the SEALs is they have not dropped their standards. They will not, you know, if there's a woman that wants to go through and can make it through, then they say, more power to you. You can do this, whatever else. But let me tell you something. This is not something where they're just going to mold down the standards in order to be PC, because they realize their job is too damn tough. And that they will be compromising not only their mission, but, you know, the defense of the United States and the defense of their own team if they allow people to get through that really don't deserve to be there.
So and sometimes in life or writing, it helps to have an outsider examine some things. Did your outsider perspective see things about Hell Week that maybe the SEALs themselves didn't really see or connect?
Yeah, I think so. And my SEAL team buddies, you know, I've got Ryan Zinke and Chris Seinog, who are both instructors at Hell Week, and Ed Heiner, all three of whom were instructors at Hell Week. One was XO. Ryan was XO, commanding officer at Coronado at Hell Week, you know, at the SEAL facility there. And every one of them said, you know, Scott, you've made this as gritty, as dirty, as mud-filled, as sickness, of all the things that made me think back, and I still have nightmares about today. I still wake up cold and shivering and things of that nature. They said, this is as close as we've seen to somebody actually putting your mud in the face in the Tijuana River, in whatever. And this is exactly what it's like to go through it. Mm-hmm. So I was very pleased with the reality that guys were telling me they felt this book brought to the subject.
Well, that's really cool. Scott, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. That book, again, Hell Week and Beyond, you can order that from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books. It's coming out May 18th. You'll definitely want to get this. Scott, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys.
America really has been facing its hell year, and we are gritting our teeth, trying not to give up as America goes through this. But just imagine how America will be on the other side of this if we use this time to expose the corruption, expose the voter fraud that stole the election, and the massive financial theft that just happened as Democrats made off with $1.9 trillion of our tax monies. But it is happening. An election integrity bill was just signed into law on Thursday in Georgia, and Democrats are furious. More are on the way, and they're furious about that. But for America to emerge transformed into a stronger and better nation, it will take us to do it. We must hold the faith, we must stand up, and we must not give up. Because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.